Sporty greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young today. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Well, they were indeed playing basketball last night in Boston, Massachusetts. And in an exciting Game 7 matchup in the National Basketball Association's Eastern Conference semifinals, the Boston Celtics prevailed over the Washington Wizards 115-105. For Washington, it was their first Game 7 in the playoffs since 1979, ending in heartbreak with Washington star point guard John Wall saying after the game that the loss hurt more because it was a decisive Game 7. Meanwhile, last night was the 30th Game 7 ever played by the Boston Celtics, which gives them the record for most Game 7s faced by any North American professional sports team. And in the end, it was a battle of the benches. While Washington's bench was only able to score 5 points the entire game, the Celtics bench players scored 48 points, led by Canadian power forward Kelly Olynyk, who scored 26 points for the Celtics, including 14 in the fourth quarter. With their win last night, Boston now heads to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they'll face the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers. The first game in that series tips off on Wednesday night. On Tuesday night, tonight, we'll have Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, pitting the Golden State Warriors against the San Antonio Spurs. Golden State has the early lead in that series, 1-0. From basketball, we go now to football. This past week, FIFA held its 67th FIFA Congress in the Middle Eastern nation of Bahrain. We talked about some of the stories coming out of that conference, among them FIFA's decision to expand the World Cup to a 48-team field for the 2026 World Cup. But one of the biggest stories was FIFA President Gianni Infantino's address to the Congress. He told those gathered that when it comes to corruption, FIFA has been a victim of fake news and alternative facts, and added that even as the organization tries to fight corruption, quote, FIFA bashing has become a national sport in some countries. Joining me now is Dave Larkin. He's an attorney specializing in international sport and anti-corruption, and he's very well acquainted with FIFA's corruption issues. Thank you very much, Dave, for joining me.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Gianni Infantino's pledge at the FIFA Congress to clean up FIFA corruption resonating with some people saying it's never going to happen. Is he the man who can actually do it? And if so, how can he get it done?
Well, I think what we're looking at is we're looking for objective measures of good governance implemented by anyone. And what we've seen to date is not particularly hopeful. Mr. Infantino has once again sort of neutered the ethics committee. We have serious questions about the people appointed. And so the process where we're looking for neutral laws that don't favor anyone and an ethical oversight that's independent seem to keep going backwards in terms of progress, and so it's very alarming. And it really raises questions about whether Mr. Infantino is the right man for the job.
So do you think there could be an effort to oust him? He's only been on the job for a year. Doesn't sound like he's getting good marks so far in the first year.
That's correct. I mean, I think that the thing you have to understand is this organization is basically pork barrel politics on a global scale. This is not an organization where when problems occur, they're able to rectify themselves, because this is a top-down money flow to FAs across the world. And so centralized power and centralized money means that these top administrators have enormous power, and it's almost impossible to remove them. And so it's really important that people like the DOJ, the FBI, the IRS monitor these organizations for change. And right now the signs are not good.
So what are some maybe quick fixes that he can undertake to get the ball rolling on cutting down on some of this corruption, maybe put his money where his mouth is?
Well, I think he's got to do exactly the opposite of what he's been doing, which is you need to empower independent oversight. And we've done, you know, even in terms of the bad old days of Sepp Blatter, we've gone backwards under Mr. Infantino. And so this is really troubling signs out of FIFA right now that we're, in fact, going backwards and not making progress in the wake of the great work of the Department of Justice, FBI, and IRS.
So do you anticipate more investigations, more corruption charges on an international level?
I'm afraid I do. I think that under the current circumstances where you do not have transparency, where you do not have accountability, that more corruption scandals are inevitable if we continue on this trajectory.
Yeah, one of those big topics about FIFA and corruption, two big topics really, are the 2018 World Cup in Russia and the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Is there anything FIFA can do to address those World Cups? Those are the ones that seem to be getting a lot of the attention when it comes to the corruption. How can they fix some of the problems there?
Well, I think you've got to understand that the quote-unquote self-investigation carried out by Michael Garcia, who's now one of Trump's potential nominees for director of the FBI, his report was extremely limited, that the report on investigation of those particular votes and those activities was essentially whitewashed because FIFA was allowed to keep all of that information under wraps. And there are questions about Mr. Garcia's judgment in carrying out those investigations under those conditions in the first place.
So not a good landscape for FIFA going forward, even as they look towards those World Cups in the future. I want to ask you about Gianni Infantino's statement. It got a lot of headlines, especially on social media, a lot of people sharing this line about alternative facts and fake news. What do you think he means by that?
Well, I think he's trying to play into this dogmatic idea that somehow that FIFA is being smeared, and that's his clearly implication that he's making. The reality is that in the wake of that, not 2 days later, we learn that there are now questions about the Secretary General's use of FIFA funds and questions about whether she should use them for her personal benefit. I mean, this is an organization that says one thing and does another. No matter what the dogma is, no matter what the grandstanding is, this organization remains lacking transparency, and it should alarm and concern everyone, especially DOJ, especially when they're afforded the idea in court that they're somehow an innocent organization. This is not an organization that appears to be acting innocently.
Well, touching on the other line, too, that he had, that FIFA has become FIFA bashing has become a national sport in some countries. How do you take that line? Is a lot of the FIFA bashing that's going on justified? Is it maybe gone too far? Or can it be turned into something that's not just bashing FIFA, but something more productive?
I think the most important thing we can do is deal with facts, deal with objective facts that are verifiable. And the objective verifiable facts are that this organization has a long history of corruption, and in terms of governance and oversight, it's going backwards. Those are the objective facts.
Does this ever get fixed? That's on the mind of many soccer fans as they look at these corruption issues. They see the same thing over and over again with a lot of these corruption charges. Do they ever get resolved?
The problem is actually bigger. It's not just FIFA, and it is definitely a problem at FIFA, but it's bigger than FIFA. We have a problem in international sport with the governance, oversight, and justice system of international sport. Until we address all of those issues, global sport will continue to have problem after problem after problem. This is a huge problem that must be addressed at the international level, and it's not going to happen without the United States and others intervening.
Well, on FIFA, I want to ask you two last questions. One on FIFA. We had the 67th Congress in Bahrain where these issues came up. Where do things stand a year from now? The 68th FIFA Congress is going to be in Moscow in 2018. Are we having this same conversation a year from now? Have anything changed? Where are we?
We're going to be the exact same place, if not going backwards, because this is an organization that's once again, instead of stepping up to the plate and holding itself to account to independent people, it's becoming more insular organization, and that's always led to more corruption.
Well, finally, I want to ask you, you touched on international sport. It sounds like certainly with FIFA there's a lot of issues, but globally there are other issues going on, and particularly with doping. And I'm a big tennis fan, so I've been closely monitoring Maria Sharapova's return after a 15-month ban for doping charges. Is tennis handling that correctly? Some people say that she should have been banned for life. Some people say that it was too harsh a punishment. Is that being handled correctly? And writ large in tennis is, and I guess international sport overall, is doping being handled correctly right now?
It's a great question. And Sharapova is sort of an example of how the system doesn't work. Doping has problems across the board. We don't have a doping system that works efficiently or serves the customer, the athletes well. Moreover, the sport justice system that we have in place is highly conflicted. And so we get these bizarre rulings and judgments that don't always match. The doping system itself is completely broken, and that itself has to be reformed. But that plays into the bigger picture that we've talked about. And that is that international sport needs a top-down, thorough rethink, because it just doesn't work. And until we really address these issues, we'll continue to see problems in doping, we'll see problems in FIFA, and we'll see problems at the IOC. This will not end until the United States and others intervene.
So if you, I know that I said that was the last question, but I do have one more quick one I want to ask because I'm intrigued. If you your way and you had the ability to take over all of international sport and fix these problems, what would you do? How would that look? What would you start with?
The very first thing that I would do is fix the sport justice system. I mean, imagine that we have an apartment. And imagine that we have a vacuum that's supposed to keep it clean. Well, the sport justice system serves that function, and right now it doesn't work. And because of that, we continue to have problems, and we'll continue to have problems. And even if we clean up sport so that everything's great, we don't have the ability to keep it clean, and that's why we'll continue to see corruption in international sport.
So not just FIFA, but across the board, a lot of cleaning up that has to be done in international sport. Dave Larkin, anti-corruption and international sport attorney, thank you very much for joining me. You can find Dave on Twitter at SportsCorruption. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you so much.
I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Well, if you're a tennis fan like I am, you know that there's a lot of big storylines playing out in the sport right now. Maria Sharapova, as we just talked about, was suspended for 15 months on a doping violation. She's now back, winning matches and hoping for a tournament win. The ever-dominant Serena Williams is out until 2018, expecting her first child and clearing the way for the women's field. And with the French Open just 2 weeks away, 18-time Grand Slam tournament winner Roger Federer has announced he's skipping the tournament in the best interest of his tennis and physical preparation for the grass court season in June. How do these storylines change things for tennis in 2017? For that answer, I talked with Giddy Nathan, tennis writer for the sports website Deadspin.com, and I started with the ladies first, asking him about Sharapova's return and Serena's absence.
The loss of Serena definitely creates a pretty big power vacuum at the top of the women's game, and there had been so much turnover, you know, in the first few spots that I think there was a pretty big opportunity for Maria Sharapova to come back from this doping ban and make deep runs in tournaments, and judging by a few weeks ago, we were wondering whether she would be getting wild card at the Slams, and based on how well she's playing, making semifinals run at Stuttgart, she may just qualify for these tournaments by points alone. So I think the field's totally open for her to make a deep run at Roland Garros. I would not be surprised by that at all.
And with Serena's absence, and it is thankfully a joyful reason, it's not an injury, but rather a pregnancy, opening up the women's field, who's the best to take advantage of that? Obviously, Maria Sharapova. I think she's played Serena 18 times and lost maybe 17 of them. Who else other than Sharapova could take advantage of this going forward?
Simona Halep's been playing great. She just won a title, Madrid. I think there's one interesting French talent coming up. Her name is Kristina Mladenovic. She's 24, so solidly in the middle of her career, but she just made it to two consecutive finals on clay. Most recently in Madrid. So she'll be one to look out for this week and definitely when Roland Garros starts up as well. I think it's been a while since the French have had a real threat, homegrown threat at Roland Garros on the women's side. So they'll probably be pretty excited about her chances there. She played a really strong three sets against Halep in the final in Madrid and could totally see that match going the other way. You know, Halep looks great too, so can't really count her out.
So it's looking like the potential for a first-time Grand Slam victory for the women in Roland Garros.
Definitely. Yeah, I would not bet against that at all.
So big news out of the men's side. Even before the tournament's begun, Roger Federer announcing that he will not play the French Open this year.
Yeah, it's not completely surprising, but it is a little bit shocking that he would be so conservative about his schedule as to take off even a Grand Slam event, French Open. However, you've got to think part of it is just seeing how dominant Rafael Nadal has been on the surface over these last few weeks. He's won his third straight title. He's 15-0. Federer, though he has had some really great competition with Nadal on various surfaces, is worst on clay. And they've had a 13-2 record there in Rafa's favor in their history. So he's probably not too eager to match up against him again.
And Rafael Nadal is having the clay court season probably of his career. I mean, he's won Madrid, yeah. He's won Barcelona, he's won the Monte Carlo Masters. He's playing in Rome now, and he's the favorite to win that. He's the favorite to win his 10th French Open title. Can anybody stop him?
It seems extremely unlikely that he will be stopped. We're robbed of one of the guys who might have given him a little bit of a worry on clay, now that we know that Roger Federer is withdrawn from French Open. But now that Nadal's run through these three clay court tournaments without too much resistance, I'm kind of wondering when the younger players are going to step up and sort of take the mantle over from Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and Murray. And obviously those latter two guys are slumping right now.
But a year ago, we would have said that Novak Djokovic looked to be running the table, and about a year ago, he won the French Open. And since then, he's really slumped, as you mentioned. He's gone as far as firing his coaches, his physio, his whole team, really, going solo now for the French Open. Where does this free fall stop for Novak Djokovic, and can he come back from it?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. Definitely one of the ones that's fascinated me the most this season. And you keep hearing him give these sort of ominous meditative quotes. In Rome, he was talking about finding his mojo again. Definitely one of the more fascinating questions of the ATP season is when Djokovic is going to find his bearings again. And you have to think it's inevitable. It will happen at some point. Physically, he seems to have the same level of fitness, as difficult as these things are to eyeball. It doesn't seem like he's lost anything to injury or age, so hopefully we'll see him back in his usual form before the year is through. As interesting as the Djokovic slump has been, it's been hard not to notice Murray having a similar slowdown on his end. He was upset in pretty interesting fashion by a 20-year-old named Borna Coric from Croatia, who I think has a lot of promise. As good as Coric is, it's still a massive upset for current number one player Andy Murray to be upset by number 59 breaking out for the first time. It's been a rough patch for Murray, and he's, as with Djokovic, we're all very curious to see when he shakes that off.
We're not expecting a rough patch from Rafa Nadal in Roland Garros. Can anyone stop him?
It's a real question. Again, it's a relief to have Nick Kyrgios and Alexander Zverev in the draw. They're always capable of taking someone down. Dominic Thiem has played outstanding few matches on clay, and he fought Nadal very well in the first set of their final in Madrid. So I wouldn't be shocked if he made a deep run at Roland Garros. It would be a bit surprising, but not outrageous, for him to make it to the final there. I think that's certainly a possibility. Another guy in his sort of cohort age-wise is Grigor Dimitrov. He took Nadal to five sets in Australia in one of the best matches of the year. So I'd like to see what he does in Roland Garros. And Kei Nishikori is a great player who has characteristically struggled with injuries. Again, it's clay court season, which is a little bit frustrating. It would have been nice to see him play Djokovic in Madrid. But he's really talented on the surface, though none of them have had the consistency to sort of take over the top few ranking spots from the old guard. I could definitely see some of them making a surprise run at a slam. One guy who's always a threat, even though he's been extremely inconsistent lately, is Gael Monfils. But anyone who's a fan of Monfils knows that inconsistency is just part of the bargain when you when you're signing up to be his fan.
What do you think will be the biggest surprise, maybe just in the next few months as we go from the clay court season into the grass season?
I think for me personally, the most exciting thing that could happen from now till, let's say, the hard court season again starts up again, would be to see someone like Alexander Zverev make a nice deep run on some of the grass tournaments. And I wouldn't put it past him. I think his game plays very nicely on that surface. He's been better on grass, so he'd be a real threat there, as with Kyrgios. And one guy who, honestly, I have not thought much about this season, even though he had a nice little resurgence late last year, is Juan Martín Del Potro. And he's been struggling with the injuries that to his wrist that sort of took him out of the game for a long time. And I think it had some family issues with the loss of his grandfather that took him out of the clay court season a bit. But he's definitely someone to watch out for. I would love to see him make his push back into the top 10. It'll be pretty tricky given that the first half of the season's been a lot slower than he would have liked. But if I'm going to sort of make a bit of a reach of a prediction, I think he'd make some deep tournament runs and crack, let's say, the top 15 before the year's through.
Well, hopefully he can, and regardless of who makes these runs, and I'm sure there will be some surprises that we're not even thinking about that are off the radar, it's an exciting time to be a tennis fan and to watch this tennis go on.
Definitely.
An exciting time to be a tennis fan, for sure. My thanks to Gideon Nathan. You can find his latest pieces on this topsy-turvy tennis season at sports site deadspin.com.
Hello, I'm Lina Hormoudou, host of Health Chat. Do you have trouble sleeping? Well, join us this Tuesday as we take a look at sleep deprivation and how to address it with our guest, Dr. Ken Redcross, internal medicine specialist and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, what does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
And finally today, it's always a good idea to be fit and lose weight if you're carrying some extra pounds, especially for sports stars who require peak physical condition to succeed at their sports. But for Eddie Lacy, a running back with the Seattle Seahawks of the National Football League, losing weight doesn't just mean better health or better athletic performance, it means cold, hard cash. Lacy's physique has been an issue in the past, especially after a photo of him sporting some weight spread across the internet a few years ago. So when the Seahawks traded for Lacy this year, they decided to make it worth his while to keep the weight off by including some weight loss incentives in his contract. Well, yesterday at his first weigh-in, Lacy tipped the scales at 253 pounds, 2 pounds lower than the 255-pound benchmark he had to clear. The result? A cool $55,000. If Lacy can keep losing weight and keep the weight off, he can earn up to an additional $300,000 in the coming months. I'd say that's a pretty good reason to hit the gym and skip dessert, and as many people noted on social media, he lost a couple pounds and made more money than they'll make an entire year. So, hey, good for him. It's nice if you can have that kind of clause in your contract. And that wraps up the May 16th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer John Dryden, and thank all of you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington. Thank you for joining me today. Sunny will be back with us tomorrow. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At approximately 182 million people, Nigeria is Africa's most populous country. Since the median age is just 18, that population is expected to relatively soon reach 400 million. Nigeria is also Africa's second biggest economy, with a vibrant, emerging entrepreneurial class that is the country's economic future. Thus, Nigeria carries a great deal of regional influence. The 2015 election of Muhammadu Buhari as president was a milestone for Nigeria and its neighbors, said Deputy Director of the Office of West African Affairs Nathan Holt during a recent teleconference. President Buhari's electoral platform was that he wanted to fight insecurity, particularly the depredations of Boko Haram and other forces in the northeast. He wanted to grow the Nigerian economy, create jobs for its growing population, and he wanted to fight corruption. Those are areas of focus that very much are consistent with U.S. interests in Nigeria. We, too, want to partner with Nigeria and its neighbors to fight terrorism. We, too, support private sector-led economic growth. And we are very much in favor of President Buhari's campaign against corruption, he said. The United States supports Nigeria in its fight against Boko Haram and ISIS, West Africa. This includes intelligence sharing, training, advice on strategic communications, and various services to support victims of Boko Haram, said Deputy Director Holt. But we also provide humanitarian assistance to Nigeria. Over the past 2 years, we have provided nearly $500 million worth of assistance to the people of northeastern Nigeria, as well as to their Lake Chad Basin neighbors, all of whom are facing near-famine conditions. We're working as hard as we can and as fast as we can to deliver food assistance and other support to those people, said Deputy Director Holt. At the end of the day, I think we and our partners all recognize there's no purely military solution. At the end of the day, the hopes and aspirations of the people need to be met. Education and water and basic governance needs to be provided in areas where it has not been provided before. And it's a joint effort. There are no easy solutions, but we're in this for the long haul.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. Do you have trouble sleeping? Well, join us this Tuesday as we take a look at sleep deprivation and how to address it with our guest, Dr. Ken Redcross, internal medicine specialist and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa. What does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next, Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.